could be there.
Oh, I wonder if... Oh, I know what it is. That's the eminent terms, I'll bet you.
Oh, we haven't got those yet.
And one of those three.
Yeah.
Okay. So
somebody's going to be able to go on the hearsay.
Yeah, I'm going to go chat with him.
I'm going to try. I don't, I'm so swamped with work right now.
Pete's coming. It's going to be tough.
Well, in the grad class, we've been kind of dealing with prophecy in Israel. So it is real big on that.
There might be a good point to get into the next topic with.
I know.
Just say, well, here's what he said. We'll bring some notes maybe, and then we'll start off the next week.
Because if you get to go there, you know, I'm going to try to get a way to do it, but I can't, probably can't guarantee that I can. So
he said he was going to come by and fix it up.
Oh, okay.
So,
well, I may not even know until Saturday night whether I'm going to go.
Right. Well, we'll be there Saturday night waiting for him. So if you want
to. Well, where are you going to pick you up?
At my house. You can just call it.
Okay.
And then
if it turns out
that
I'm going to go, I'll let you know.
And then we can just come back and pick you up.
It'll be fun to all go together. Parking's probably going to be jammed over there, too.
Yeah.
I drove by there one time, and, you know, I've never been in the church.
Is that what, the new church?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, lesson 30. Now, smoke is cleared after the last test here.
Hey, you own firms now.
Well, yes, hey, you own. One yellow.
We're just listening to that.
Were you?
Yeah, saying how nice it is that we don't have to learn them that way.
Oh, yeah. It's not that bad if you do learn them that way, but I kind of like the system better. It's better just because when you get to, you know, you get two Hebrew letters, you know, and see, Hebrew goes backwards and English goes forwards, you know, it gets kind of nasty after a while. And I think the one yod just kind of gets it real clear. One, position number one, you know, you're not dealing with a Hebrew letter.
Well, what's the Hebrew?
Huh?
What was that?
Pay-yod. It's from the verb pa'al.
Oh.
Pay-ayin lavas.
Yeah.
And so a one yod in that system is called pay-yod.
Also for the where the pay is in pa'al.
Where the pay is in pa'al, the yod is in the other.
So they have a pay-al on and pay.
Pa'al means to do. I think it's the same one that, you know, makes the hip-yo and hip-pa'o and so forth. All that comes from pa'al in their forms. I'll show you how that works.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's kind of a memory type thing to use.
Huh.
I don't know why they chose pa'al. You know, it's too guttural, but, you know, you would have hoped they chose, you know, something more regular. But the thing is, in that system, if you ever see, you know, pay-yo, pay-guttural, iron wow or iron yod or hollow verbs,
llamas
olive, iron libby or like matzah, your quiescent ones, llama hay is your, you know, free hay.
Iron double gemini. It says iron double.
Oh, iron double, okay, that'd be the same as iron. So it should be verbs like with a general sentence.
Yeah.
Some of them just say gutturals because they, you know, a number of them are alike. Others will specify each different guttural. In fact, if you look in your analytical, in the first section, you've got page after page after page after page of all these variations.
I'd go read it sometime now and know a little bit.
Yeah, you read through that, and that's one thing I kind of like to try to keep from beginning Hebrew students. I don't want them to read that first. They get so intimidated whenever they teach it. Because they give you every little detail there. It's just the whole map of all the irregularities.
Well, if you haven't lost it yet, you won't lose it now.
Okay.
There's only six in here now.
Okay.
A war of attrition.
Yeah. Section 120. Verb is one yod, imperfect, imperative, and infinitive construct. Now we're just lumping them all together. We're taking this kind of verb and we put the whole stuff together here. So just as in the class of one verbs one nun, there are two distinct types of verbs one yod, depending on the stem vowel of the imperfect. And we'll get to the full paradigms of them down here a little bit later on. But again, the basic situation involves the yod itself assimilating. And so in the perfect, we have two kinds here, those with seri imperfects and those with pasach imperfects. And the unfortunate choice here, we happen to have the seri imperfect has a pasach perfect, and the pasach imperfect has a seri perfect. So it's kind of a reverse. You kind of cross the two. If you look at the perfect and the imperfect there, it's yashav, but it's yeshav, and it's yashain, but it's yeshav. So they kind of reverse each other when they get to the perfect. But remember the unusual thing about it, this first type here, the seri imperfect, we haven't seen those very often.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen pasach type or cholam type imperfect, but seri imperfect, that's what we got now. So we get yay shade with the imperfect. And notice now, the third person form has only one yod. the two yolds, you might say, have coalesced or something, but you only get one yold on it. Now, the type below, with the pop-up type, you get a yold and a uric yold. So you do get a yold on the yolk, as it were, but now it becomes a uric yolk.
Which is why it's better to distinguish your uric yolk at the ball point from your continental yolk, right?
Mm-hmm. So yi shan is your form there. The imperative, you get shave, shortened form, and then yi shan for, apparently it doesn't actually occur, but that would be the theoretical imperative for that verb to sleep. And apparently you don't ever have to tell anybody to sleep.
Sleep.
Sleep. It's always shake sleep, you know.
Don't sleep. Of course, if you were going to make it, you'd get the imperfect.
Yeah, right. So, Shevis for the infinitive construct, there's that segulate form, and we've already seen those. Mm-hmm. And Shiv-ti for the form of the suffix. Those are pretty regular. And then for the one below, it's Yishon, there's your infinitive construct, that's pretty regular. That's that normal type. And then Shoni would be my sleep. My sleeping, or whatever. Okay? Yes. Question?
What's
the next one? Yoshni, I'm sorry. Yoshni. Sorry. Chopping off the front and sticking things around. You see all these different forms, but if you compare that, you know, you wonder what you're looking at. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yoshni. Okay, and I think the main difference there is our yod pretty much stays intact through the forms in the second type, but in the first type, the yod's just dropping off, period. Now, the imperfect has a yod, but only one. And you'll see that in the rest of the forms, there's no yod at all. That one yod there, you could be considered the yod of the prefix of the imperfect, rather than the yod of the root verb. You'll see that in the paradigm. Okay, then verbs with seri imperfects have seri in the preformative and have short imperative in infinitive form. So the short imperative with that shave, and in the infinitive form, shevet is kind of considered the short form. It may not actually be physically any shorter, but it's what it's thought of. And,
Did he short my vowels?
Hmm?
What do they mean by short my vowels?
Oh, well, usually when they mean short in length. You know, like shave, it's only got one syllable. And the shevet is not so much short, but it's kind of like other ones that bop off the whole thing. You only get one syllable. Some of them do that, but you're going to find a previous discussion of this.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's one of those ones. I suppose it's just because of the retraction, the stress and so forth, and everything kind of comes at the front. It kind of gives a shorter feeling to it. That's what it's called in general.
Bottom of it, about page 133.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, a short form with a suffix tau, yeah, they call it there. See, the regular form, nisoa, and then they had the short form, sha'at, with a suffix tau. So it's called short. I mean, it's still got two syllables, but it's short anyway.
Okay.
That's one less because you put a pop-up on the other one when you say it.
Well, I suppose you could, yeah, because of the ayin. But over here you get two sigils, and that's what's called short. So, and that's just a regular pattern. But they are short sounds. I mean, you might think of it this way: the normal form has a colon, which is a long vowel, and these other forms don't have any long vowels. They either got pop-ups or sigils or something. So that might be a way to think of the two. Okay.
What are we talking about, sigils?
Over here on page 138, the one we've got here, the shevet, that's called a short imperative and infinitive, short infinitive, and it's got two sigils there. But it's analogous to that other one that had two baka. Okay, then verbs with seri imperfect have seri and preformative, like I said, exactly like yashav are yalaz and yarad. So those two verbs are exactly the same in their paradigms. So you get, you know, you can just transfer the vowel points down from that, from Yashav up there, and you got the same thing. So it's kind of nice. We see something else that's the same exact. Okay, so that's Yelev and Lev and Ledev and Lizzi, Litzi, and Yerev and Rev and Redev and Rizzi. Okay, then the verb Yada belongs to this group, even though it has a pop-up imperfect due to the final root guttural. Because the final root is a guttural, remember those always take pop-up type imperfects. But this apparently is kind of a mix in a way, because it's got the pop-up imperfect because of the guttural, but it still follows the pattern that Yashav follows, as if it had a very imperfect. So it's got pop-up imperfect, but it acts like a very imperfect as far as the rest of the form. So you've got Yada, but then you get Yeda, instead of something like Yida, which you might have expected. Then you've got just plain Da for the imperative. It's short, but it's got pop-up. And Da'a is short with pop-up. And Dati, to know with the pop-up. So you just have basically pop-ups all the way through, except for that preformative vowel on the yod, and other than that, it's the same pattern. See, it follows this pattern because it doesn't get the long forms for everything like the other ones do. So they have to kind of include it in that first group, even though it does have pop up in the imperfect. Then the verb yatsa has a slightly different form because of the three olives. It's also three olives. So just look at that. We've got yatsa, but then it's yetse. So that's pretty straightforward. I mean, if you think of it as a very imperfect, then it's okay. Say, safe, there you get a quiescent olive there instead of the two segol, instead of set aspergen, which you might have expected, you get safe. And safety, or you even carry that into the suffix form. So I guess you just have to look at that one and learn it. The verb halak is irregular in belonging here also. Now, halak is a one hey, it's not a one yod, but it acts like a one yod. In other words, it's a one hey only in the perfect, but in the imperfect, it acts like the verb was yalak instead of halak, because you get ye late, leket, and lekti, just exactly like it would have been if the verb was yalak. That one you have to watch. That's another one you have to watch.
The word.
Yeah. Remember we had one back there, that lakad or whatever it was, that looked, that acted like a one nun. Now we've got a yeah, lakak, I guess, was acted like a one nun. Now we've got a one hey that's acting like a one yo, think one yo.
Oh well.
But in halak is a common verb, so you're gonna have to get used to that one real quick. And that's not too bad, because you do see it often enough that you do see something like lake or something. Yeah, that's an imperative for halak. Okay, so it's not quite as bad as it looks, because it's used commonly. You can use it quick. Now, to the second group represented by Yashen above belong the verbs, and most of these don't have fully attested forms. You can see there's a lot of blank spaces. This first one, Yarash, to inherit, does have a full paradigm, but all the rest of them, you know, have mostly just perfect and imperfect. That's about it. So that'll simplify things a little bit, just because they don't appear very often. So you have Yarash becomes Yirash. And then Rash, Reshet, and Rishti. And then Ya'at becomes Yi'at. And then the rest of the forms don't exist. That means to advise. We have Yakat becomes Yikat. And no other form, it means to wake up. And Yabesh becomes Yibash, to dry up. And we do have an infinitive construct. In a construct form, which apparently has an optional tau on that, so it's either Yiboshet, I guess you'd have to have either Yibosh or Yiboshet, probably. Okay, and then the three olive verb, we have Yare, and it becomes Yira, Yiro, and here. Now note the noun yira here is normally used as the infinitive construct for this verb. So instead of using the infinitive construct, they normally use a noun. They've got another noun form that they use for that, for fear, as an object or something. So, and that's, you know, probably where a lot of it's hard to say whether nouns came first as the as infinitive construct of verbs or whether they used, you know, like this, the noun to infinitive construct, but there's certainly a relationship between those. If you remember, your infinitive is a verbal noun. It's got attributes of both verbs and nouns. And so that's not illogical that might happen. It's just not, you wouldn't necessarily know when it's going to happen. So yirah with the comma te there, the feminine noun, is used there. The imperatives and infinitive constructs of this group are poorly attested in biblical Hebrew, but show the same mixture of the two types which we encountered with verse 1 and 9. Okay, so you're seeing some of them have yirah there, you see, in other words, with reshet. In other words, the mixture is between the segulet pattern and between the normal pattern with shawakol. Now,
so the thing that distinguishes these two types in this grouping
mm-hmm.
is the presence or the absence of that yod.
It's especially
they're saying that the constant yod is being dropped, and sometimes mm-hmm. you stick on the yod for the imperfect.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, if we have the imperfect, you have yod stuck on it.
Okay.
Then that's the
yod
comes from the prefix and the
imperfect,
not from
right. Yeah, the first type you can consider, you can think of, is that the yod is gone, period. And that the yod that appears in the imperfect is only the yod of the normal yod of the imperfect. And the second type keeps the yod. And if you see the full paradigm, that'll be helpful. If you look at the bottom page 139 for just a quick moment, you see the paradigm. The first paradigm is for yeshev, that's the imperfect for yasha. And the last paradigm over there in the row is they use Yarash there instead of the one they use there. But that's your paradigm for the second type. Now, if you look at the first type, you both got yod and nod. But if you look at all the rest of them, the one in the last column has a yod all the time. And it's the first letter of the root. Whereas the one in the first column doesn't have a yod at all anywhere in the paradigm except for where you would get a yod normally in the paradigm, you know what I mean? In other words, in your third person masculine singular, your third person masculine plural, you get a yod, but that's the prefix yod.
Mike?
Yes?
Do you know why on the bottom here we have a metheg all the way across on that form? Metheg on a shawa, metheg on a hirek.
Okay, we've got the metheg on the hirek and on a seri, you mean?
A seri, yeah.
On a seri. Well, I think the main problem is, I think the main problem is that normally a closed a syllable, it's indicating a closed syllable.
Okay.
Let's see. Wait a minute. No, it should be, it's indicating an open syllable. I think what the problem is that the metheg is used to indicate, to show where it's anomalous. It's unusual that you have an open syllable in that case. So I think it's still considered open syllable.
Why would it be unusual? You have a long vowel.
Yeah, you do have a long vowel, but it's just in this particular position, the first syllable of a word and having a schwa and so forth. Most of the time you see that kind of a pattern. It's with a short vowel and a closed
syllable.
Could
it be that you would expect a reduction because of the...
Well, that's another thing, too. You might normally expect a reduction there, but see, the normal imperfect pattern doesn't have a reduction there either. So, let's see, if we compare it to...
Okay, here it is, page 27. I mean, since the vowels, comments, and seri are regularly replaced by shua and open syllable from two or more places before the main address, their appearance in such positions may be regarded as anomalous.
Yeah, okay.
They're usually marked with a metheg.
Okay.
Unopened is an example in Barakatani.
Okay. So the problem here is that we do have, we would expect a pretonic reduction here with the seri there in that position. The only problem is that with the we have the with the tier E or tier she, this last form you have a here at yod there, and that's what has a metheg.
Well, it said even any long vowel.
Did it? Okay.
Yeah.
I knew there was something like that. It just, you know, when it was in a position that you normally shorten, even though. See, there's no problem, and if the seri is there, it is a long syllable, and the next one's going to have to be vocal. The schwa's going to have to be vocal, but it's just that you don't see that normally, so they go ahead and put it in that thing there to show it this.
Okay.
Sorry.
So it would be taped to E.
Mm-hmm.
And T Rush She.
Mm-hmm. She. Right.
Sounds funny too, but it should be Tear She.
Yeah, right. Alright.
Funny, I was reading in the Biblical Hebraic, and I was just reading it just to see if I could.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that I was able to deduce what some of the other accent marks were, those funny ones, I mean, just as I would read it out loud.
Mm-hmm.
The stress was going right.
Mm-hmm.
A major and a minor stress were going right where they were doing it, just having read them a number of times.
Most of those will follow if you know your vocabulary, know where the accents fall, and you'll learn them right. Then you look on there, you may see a lot of funny little different marks, but they'll be in a place where you normally have the accent. The only difference is when you get things in pause or something, and then there's a shift. But that's usually pretty easy.
I think the only Hebrew scripture I knew by heart, Deuteronomy 6:4.
Okay, going back up the middle of the page here, the verb yakol has irregular forms with shurek in the preformative of the imperfect. So we're going to set this one aside. It's a one yod also, but it's got even a different pattern in the imperfect. And you get yukal, tukal, tukali, etc. So that one's kind of fun. That's why I told, I think it was four, we had some exercise or something, somebody tried to put this in the imperfect, or we decided that the reason that it couldn't be in the imperfect is because we haven't had the imperfect yet. But here now we've got it, so we can't use that anymore. Okay, in the class of verbs one yod, and in those classes to be treated in the following lessons, there is frequently a difference in the imperfect form used with while conversing, particularly in the third person singular masculine and feminine, and third second person singular masculine, and the first person plural. In general, the accent on these forms is retracted to an open preformative syllable. Now we've already run into this. With Wayomar and then Wayomer. Sari in the stem is replaced by Segol. Similar instance was met with Yomar versus Wayomer. There are, however, inconsistencies. So this is just a general, I'm going to try to give you some general observations on this. And you do need to be aware of this, though, because we do encounter these things frequently because we're seeing more often than not, we're seeing verbs in a converted form. In the actual text. And so because of that, you do need to be aware of it. Now, the change is regular for teri imperfects other than yetse. So when as long as not yetse, we see yeshev, for example, and notice your stress is retracted. Yeshev, wateshev, and waneshev, for dwell, the verb to dwell from yashav. And the point here is that you get a retraction of the stress, and you get, instead of yeshev, it's yeshev, so yeshev. So you shorten that seri to segol, the second one, and retract the stress. And then to bear, watelev, is the only form that they is attested. Descend, yerev, watelev, and wanerev. So it occurs on only those three forms. And to walk, wayelev, watelev, wanelev, but yose does a difference. It's wayese, so that one just doesn't change, wayese and so forth. So you might have expected it to, but it doesn't. And I suppose something has something to do with the olive there. You don't like a sickle before it has an olive. So that's probably the reason, that's my guess anyway. Now, as good as anybody else's guess, I suppose. Now, part B, it is not found with the pasuk imperfects other than yeda. So yeda will do it, but the rest of them won't. So if you've got a pasuk imperfect like yarash, it'll be wayirash, and wayishan, wayikat. All of them are just keeping the same form. No retraction of stress, no change, no shortening. But we get wayeda. There's no the goal there, but it stays pasach, but at least retracts the stress. So you get or yada. I suppose that this is not so much a problem to try to, learn all of these ones. So you just have to be kind of aware that this happens, and when you see them in the text, you're not thrown someone for a loop on them. It's good to get some exposure to them. Several verbs have imperfects formed on the analogy of roots one nun. We have the verb yatsar, for example, to fashion. The imperfect is yitzor. And notice we get a dagesh in the tzavi. The kind of the yod assimilates, and it does the same thing as the one nun. Remember, the nun assimilated, and it was represented by a dagesh in the second letter. Same thing happens with some of these one yod. That's why one yod are kind of nasty. They'll do lots of different things. You can't always tell for sure what they're going to do. So a few of them do this. And they also have an irregular form, though. I suppose it's irregular. I suppose there's something common. They've all got Sali as a second position. I don't know if that's true of everyone that does this kind of thing. So the rest of the paradigm would be just like the one nuns. Okay, then given below are the full paradigms, the most frequent types of the class one yod. So unfortunately, you split the page here. It'd be more convenient if the whole thing was on one page. But you can do if you want. If you want this, you know, to use photocopy both pages, cut them up and paste them together and have a paradigm. Hoping if you like, but I think we've already pointed out the main things we wanted to see on those before. I guess noting that method was interesting to do, and noting the fact that your first column there loses the O's and the last column keeps it, and the ones in the middle all lose it too, but they do a little bit different.
The only book I've ever seen that splits the paradigm right in the middle.
Yeah, I know. That is not that good. I'll go back and forth. So that's the only suggestion I would. If you want to keep a paradigm chart in the back, you know, you can photocopy these.
Too bad so few people take Hebrew and develop a computer program to generate all the paradigms.
Yeah. Our trouble is there's a small market for it.
Yeah.
No, but in the world, you know, percentage-wise, is even a smaller market. And we've got a much higher percentage of our congregation that
knows
Hebrew than the average church or seminary or anything else, probably.
Probably higher than the average in New York City.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, of course.
It's probably higher than that, even.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Biblical Hebrew.
They probably know about Deuteronomy 6:4 and a couple of
them. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Psalm 23.
Okay, do we have any other questions on these paradigms?
Yeah. In looking through all these forms for the imperfect, it would almost seem like that it would be easier just simply to memorize the form of the perfect with each verb you want.
Well, you mean the main form of it?
Because the rules seem to be so irregular. You got four or five rules that apply to one, and four or five verbs that fit in one category, and you go down the line.
That would seem to be okay, but when you start to see, we're going to be in the next few chapters here, adding all kinds of, you know, we're going to take a new section of verbs each time. By the time you put them all together, you try to knock it down any way you can. That's what you're doing, trying to group them together any way you can to try to get some common patterns. It does become debatable, which is easy to remember.
The problem I see is that these rules will soon be forgotten. There's no way you can do all those things clicking. But if you did memorize the words, you saw it often.
If you memorized that first form of it and could remember what peculiarities occurred beyond that, I think you'd probably be all right to do it that way. In fact, before I give you a test, I'll tell you which ones these verbs will be responsible for and so forth, and then you can do it that way if you like. I certainly don't object to that. It's just a matter of what's easiest for you.
Appendix B here. And there's 48 different different variations, so I don't think anything can help.
it does get to be rather nasty. But the main thing we're trying to do here is not going through this and expecting you to have retain all of it. It's just a matter of it's just kind of studying each one of them, seeing what they do. And then we're going to run into these. And when we see them in the text, you'll probably recognize them without even having to go through all this stuff. So the main thing is trying to develop a familiarity that will breed recognition.
Well, it does seem now
publicized so far, if one knows the particular bird, if he knows they're perfect, mm-hmm. pretty imperfect, he can figure out the rest.
Pretty much of it. Pretty much you can, yeah. There are some things where adjusted form might be different, or there may be some debate on, for example, some of these that take the short type or the long type on the infinitive mm-hmm. construct. You may not know that for sure, but you're going to be, you know, pretty well set if you've got both of those.
And will the other, whatever you call them, NIFL, with all mm-hmm. the still apply there, you can pretty much know that.
Same kind of principles will apply there. You'll find that when you're in your derived verbs, the problem areas sometimes come in different areas. In other words, for these, one yod is a real problem. But for a nifal, for example, one yod is no big deal because you've got a prefix nun already. You know, in other words, it kind of depends on where the vowel, where the gutturals fall, and you know where the funny letters fall in the whole pattern to decide where you're going to have trouble or not.
It's kind of ahead of the game, but like the prefix nun there, is that going to become part of the verb itself, and then when you make a perfect or imperative action there, or is it added after?
Well, what happens is that you get a different pattern. The nun in the perfect may not always be in the imperfect. So you might see a different pattern in the imperfect, but there'll be different prefixes and suffixes, and sometimes different, just a different vowel pattern. So, you know, you can get a lot of funny, you know, possible combinations, but they're pretty regular. By and large, those derived verbs don't have the same variations as these do. So I guess that should make it a general statement there. We'll see them when we get there. Okay. So the main thing here is when just to recognize these guys when you see them. You can run along and you find what looks like a verb form, but it's too short. It looks like it's too short. It doesn't look like right for perfect. It's got the wrong suffixes, and it's got tau on the front or something, or some prefix on it, and funny vowel pattern and so forth. What you need to do is say, oh, it's probably a one yod or one nun or something like that. So if you know that much, if you know that it's unusual and you know that it's probably not going to be found where I think it's going to be found, that'll save you a lot of time even there. You know that it's one of these every irregular ones. Okay. That's vocabulary lesson 30. Noun, shalom, the all-purpose word in Hebrew. Teeth, well-being, state of oneself. It's used as a greeting. It's used like for hello or for goodbye and but everything else in between. Shalom, shalom, shalom. There's an idiom too, sha'al l'shalom, to inquire about the health of somebody. So you're asking about the peace.
Sha'al l'shalom, shalom, shalom.
Yeah, right.
How's David doing?
Right, exactly. Right. Yeah. So you could talk about somebody asking the peace of somebody. Asking, you know, the status of their being.
Is that final la, is that going to be attached on to something?
Yeah, that final la will be attached to whoever it is you're asking. So if it's David, for example, you want to ask how David's doing.
Okay.
You'd say, you talk about somebody saying, you know, he asked how David was. It'd be sha'al l'shalom l'dawid.
He asked for the peace today.
Mm-hmm. Right. In other words, it's the idea of he inquired with reference to the peace of the peace of the state of being today.
Peace
that is today. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Then we have emek, meaning valley or lowland, segulate noun, inki, the suffix form. So it's got it takes the hirik. Baal is in the plural im, means lord, master, owner, or husband. It's frequent in idioms as one invested with or endowed with, such as Baal Chalamos, the dreamer. What would that literally mean?
Lord of dreams.
Lord of dreams, yes. Lord of dreams or master of dreams or owner of dreams. So I think they're picking up more on the idea of owning dreams, you know. So he's one possessed with dreams. He owns mm-hmm. dreams.
Baal.
Yeah, right. So,
Lord.
Also members, plural, of a guild or profession, such as Baalei Hafarashim, would be professional horsemen. So they're the kind of the owners of the horsemen type of thing. They're a guild of profession, so kind of another interesting expression. The lords of, you know, horses. The lords of horses or something, I don't know.
Masters of horses.
Yeah. Masters. But I think Farash is horseman itself. Jesus is horse, so this would be masters of horsemen, I guess.
Yeah.
Masters of horsemanship.
Right.
It's also a proper name for the Canaanite deity, of course, Baal.
Rarely applied to God.
Rarely applied to God, yeah. It is on occasion, though. There are some scriptures where it's applied to the true God. In fact, he does it as a play on words. Because the word itself can mean Lord, but it also was used as the name of the deity, a Canaanite deity. You shall no more call me Bailey,
yeah.
Is that what they have to?
Yeah.
You shall no more call me Bailey, you shall call me Ishi.
Well, that brings an interesting question, because they were probably worshiping Yahweh in the image of Baal.
Uh-huh.
And so he said, you're directing your worship to me, but you got this dumb idol in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're calling me Baal, you miss him, but you will be missing.
Okay, then adjective, rachok, meaning distant or far, and you can have me rachok at a distance or from afar, that in the preposition into it. Karov, meaning near or close, and then you can use the preposition el following that if you want to say close to something. If this was, you know, close to the road or something, it would be karov el haderek or something. And then karav is the verb form, to be near or draw near or approach. And Yikrav is the imperfect, so it's a Pasach Hatter perfect.
Is that how that
is? Doesn't say here.
Or is it El Karov?
Oh, you mean the one above on the adjective?
Yeah, is it El Karov or Karov?
No, it's Karov El, and it would just be the preposition following. So,
okay.
Yeah, if you want to say close to me or something, it'd be Karov
Alish. Would be
Alish.
Following
that. Well, let's see. Yeah, it's
Karov El.
Yeah, it could be yes or no, depending on, yeah, with L, it would probably be with Makev and A, you know, obviously. Well, is that right for that one? I can't remember. I'm not sure. Funny how you forget that name.
A is God.
Yeah, by itself. I think this one's just L.
Yeah, I think
it's
so.
Just, but the thing about with or without Makev, I can't remember if this one is used or not. Now, if you have a suffix
sure
on, of course, it'll be the plural type suffixes. Okay, they give it as with Makev there. That's the way to give it in the dictionary. So you're probably going to see it with Makev.
Yeah.
They just didn't put it down here. Okay. So you can use, and now the verb also can use L. If you want to say approach to something, you use L, L, or B. All three of those prepositions are used. And it'd be interesting to study the three, you know, if there's enough examples of each one to see if there's any difference. I would expect that, especially with a B, it has a slightly different idea, but sure. Okay, Yashin is the perfect form to sleep, and the imperfect is Yishan. Now, Yashin is kind of a stated verb. I guess you can think of sleep as a state of being. It's got that stated pattern with the theory there. Sha'al means to ask, inquire, or request. And Yish'al is the imperfect form for that, Pasach type, because of the guttural imperfect position. And if you're asking for a thing, you'll use S as the direct object marker. If you're asking a person, you'll use S, but then you might use L and Min, asking, you know, to a person, you're directing your question to a person, or asking from a person something, asking information from a person. It's interesting, this word Sha'al is one of the candidates for the derivation of the word Sheol. Some feel that it's from the verb Sha'al to ask. And the idea being the Sheol is the place that's asking for everything. You know, it's asking, it's demanding your presence, you know.
Mm. Good question.
Yes. I think it's some derived from another root, too, an Arabic root. It's a different root.
Do we get
Darash? A little bit. This is more of asking information, whereas Darash would be more for seeking or inquiring. Well, let's see, to inquire, you're looking for something. Darash is more trying to find something. And this is more getting information. And I think there might be some overlap with them. You know, to inquire after something, I think Darash was given more meaning. But the feeling you get with Darash is more, you're on a search looking and hunting for something, whereas this is more just a simple asking. Okay, then Anna to answer. So there's the other side of it, ask, and here's the answer. And you answer a person again, ask. And then plus B to testify against. So if you use Anab, somebody, if you're answering in somebody, if you're answering in them, and testifying against them. So that's idiomatic. Conjunction terem or veterem means before or not yet. Usually followed by the imperfect regardless of the tense required in English. So before he had lain down, or he had not yet had laid down, is veterem ishkab. Using the imperfect, we would translate it before he had laid down or not having yet laid down. But I think if you just try to put yourself into Hebrew thought, you know, it's before he will lay down, you know, even though it's talking about something in the past, it's almost as though when you say before, you're kind of putting yourself just before. You really are putting yourself before, and you sort of, so if you're putting yourself before, it's going to be future to you. So it's kind of that theme of the Hebrews trying to live it out, you know, project you back into the time, like a little bit. Philosophizing a little bit here, but you know, you've seen this kind of pattern before. It may not be as strange as it may appear. Proper names, Yisrael, for Jacob, or the name of the people of Israel. Israel. Yisrael.
And Yashar.
Yeah, let me see now. It's either prince with God or prevail with God. This is where they normally analyze it.
And Yashar is rich. Is that or something like that?
Yeah, rich one. Or
I was just thinking, Shar is the thing. I will sing to God.
Oh, yeah, an imperfect.
Yeah.
Or he will sing to God.
He will sing to God.
His name's getting funny. You got a new theory in the name of this.
Sing with God,
John. What will sing to God?
Well, some of us, we haven't had the imperfect of the birth. You can see that usually there's a yod or a shirek that comes back into it in the imperfect.
Oh, well.
Okay, and Yosef, Joseph. Okay, well, let's start with the exercises for tomorrow. Let me tell you which ones to do for tomorrow. We'll do the A and B orally. We'll only do the odd ones. Part C, do the odd ones only. 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13. Part D, do the odd ones, 1, 3, and 5. And then E, do it all. So we'll do that for tomorrow.
The odd words.
Only the odd ones. All of them except for part E. Part E, you do it all. There's no numbers to type about it even anymore.
Every other word.
Oh, every other word? That would really confuse you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so going back to exercise A, let's see what we can do here as far as translating these. Number one, Doug, go ahead, read it. Do a translation. Miss Rima. Okay. So what's that? Miss Rima is Egypt. Toward Egypt. So your problem is the first word.
Going down toward Egypt.
Right. It's the verb is yarad. The imperfect would be yerei. The imperative would be raised. The infinitive construct would be redet. And then you have the infinitive construct with a suffix. You get the segel, of course, get that pattern because it's rith t for like my descending. So this is rith senu, our descending. They just have anu instead of e. So it's just like, if you look at page 138, and you have yarad there, the last form there is rith t. And this is just rith senu. So rith t, the uric yod is the first person suffix. This is the third first person plural suffix. So rith senu. So it's our descending into Egypt, or descending toward Egypt, Egypt already. Okay, good. Number three, Jim?
Elitek Bain.
Okay.
In your bearing of the sun?
Yes, in your bearing of sun, or
in
your bearing of the sun, yeah. And loosely, if you have, you know, one like, you know, you've probably seen it, since they probably translate it when you bore a son or something. But it's loosely in your bearing son. Yeah. It would probably be in a temporal modifying clause. Okay, number five, Tony. Good expectation. How is going to be second person?
Oh.
I see, you look at, you know, the E in the end is what tripped you up here.
Yeah. Nice one.
Okay, that's what's fun about this whole
exercise. Yeah. So I see.
Yeah. It's from Yare to fear. Mm-hmm. And you get Yira. I guess you didn't get the whole credit for that verb, but then. Okay, tier E then would be what?
You will not fear them?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Or don't fear, because you're using all plus the. Don't fear. Don't fear. An exhortation to a woman here.
Mm-hmm.
Feminine singular. Probably that's one of the reasons it's kind of hard to see. You don't see feminine singulars very often. So Al-Kir-E is don't fear.
Why would you say that's an exhortation to a woman?
Because of the feminine tier E.
Tier E. You can actually say that?
Yeah.
I thought that would just be the form it would be in if it was with a man.
No, see,
don't you fear.
Don't you fear. Don't you fear. And you're talking to a woman because you use the feminine form. You're talking to a man, you use the masculine form.
Even if it was in a sentence.
That's why you don't see it very often, because very often you see an exhortation to a woman only. See.
Huh.
Huh.
So you would say if it was masculine, then it would be what would it be? Tier A?
Yeah, it's probably tier A. Now they don't have the full paradigm for that, so I'm not sure what that last vowel is. Probably tier, you know, with Bapak or with Theri.
Tier A or tier A.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a pretonic reduction when you start the
bone. Mm-hmm.
Is that what happens?
Tira. It'd probably be tier Ra. Oh, with contrast. Tier Ra with comments, because nobody has knowledge on the analogy of what they've got there. So, you shouldn't put the paradigm for that guy down, of course. Oh, would it be like? No, it wouldn't be like that one. Okay, so it has to be tier off. Okay.
Quite a challenge.
Well, we'll finish this up tomorrow then.
We didn't get that comment from what we know about
three all up things. We had an all up, yeah.
But not necessarily anything on these 68, you can do that too.
Well, no, just I think the only thing you've got to go by is if you look at on page 139, they give you the Theolifer, Yar-A, and becomes Yir-Ah. And then on that basis, you can say, well, the rest of the paradigm must be like, must be just like Yirash, this last one, except for you get a Thomas instead of a Thothak in all those positions. So under that analogy, it would be Yir-Ah. So they didn't bother to put the whole paradigm down. They said, well, the only difference is that make a Thothak, make a Thomas out of it. Okay. Well, you can finish the rest of that tomorrow. We'll get people to do it. So you see here, there's no new grammar to learn here. It's just a matter of these forms and the irregularity.
So we're basically wrapping up with these categories of difficulties and perfect imperative and indignant constructs.
The next few chapters are going to be that way. Let me see.
Till 37.
Yeah. Well,
that's our problem. Till 34, we go into passive participle.
Oh, yes. We haven't had. Okay, geminate verbs. Okay, that's. But yeah, passive participle. That's about the next thing in grammar. Infinitive absolute is covered in that chapter, too.
That's how far do you think we're going to get by the end of the
school? We'll have one more test, probably.
Yeah, we'll have one more test through chapter 32. And then hopefully we'll get a little further than that. These next few chapters, as nasty as they are, they go pretty fast. And it's just a matter of learning these key areas. No more new grammar. No more new grammar for a while.
Where did they get the last Hebrew class?
I think seem to recall we got to chapter 35.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know if we'll be quite that far this time. It's funny because I thought we were going faster than we did before, but we had one extra hour. We got one extra hour this time. You guys must be asking more questions than they did.
Yeah, I think so.
That's been a lot of
questions. Lloyd's been working on a lot of
things. But then again, I think there's no doubt in my mind that your understanding is better than the previous question.
Yeah.
You sometimes have to trade one thing for another, but we're not that far off. We're
not sure. That's
no, there's no problem. I mean, if we clear chapter 35, there'll be no problem next year.
We probably will be anyway. Because I can probably do for a test about what? 20.
Yeah, how many weeks do we have left? Three.
Three.
We'll probably be. We might get past there.
Yeah, a lot about the 20th probably.
And another thing is too that when you learn it well, the second year goes faster.
The
stuff, and we won't be doing so much of. We've really covered a lot of second-year material this year, and asking some of these questions about what happens further on down. Well, that's all right. So as long as we don't get too far back down. Remember not, I don't feel too far. One thing, too, is that from here on out, things go faster because we're doing fewer exercises. In other words, we're going through fewer classes, so the class time goes quite as fast. That's part of the
lower
Any grief?
It wasn't because I was really... I'd like to say that I was trying to be merciful to you. I'm giving you a word for the real reason is that 60% of class go through it.
So on the book of interpreting prophecy, are we going to jettison the term primary?
Oh. I don't know.
It seems like we're heading that way.
It's
not a problem.
No, I think we just need to more carefully define it if we're going to use it.
Yeah.
I'm really thinking about it. I don't know what you use as place.
I know what you could say. You could say something like most evident.
This is the obvious.
The obvious. Don't do that. This book just got done refuting that, but that's what they use in such cases in their logic. These are 20 ways the cult mysteries of the Bible.
All right.
One of his 20 is that they don't give you logical reason, they just
it's not obvious. Manifestly obvious.
I know. We'll call it the straightforward interpretation.
We'll just call it that.
Yes. Well, this is it. And everything else is application.
You know where that came from? Michael did.
I didn't even remember that. Considering it. I don't know what to call it. I don't know what to call it yet. Let's see what Linsky says. Mac 10:30.
He's a good one?
He's a good guy. Okay. Everything he says is right.
Be careful.
Be careful.
I mean, he's as good as my pastor.
Well, this guy here is the guy who says that the three parables Matthew obviously have to take together.
I'm aware of that. Very well aware of that.
Thought you'd get my book.
Sorry, Mark.
I'd like to have
this is
stop listening to the statement while you're reading. You gotta hear the statement. He's giving 20. He's got good points here, but this one really interesting. One of his 20 ways that the cult of the three is he calls what he calls collapsing context. Mm-hmm. Two or more verses which have little or nothing to do with each other are put together as if one were commentary on the other. For example, the Mormons associate Jeremiah 1:5 with John 1:2 and 14, and thus imply that both verses talk about the pre-mortal existence of all human beings. Jeremiah 1:5, however, speaks of God's foreknowledge of Jeremiah, not his pre-mortal existence. And John 1:2 refers to the pre-existence of God's Son and not to human beings in general. That's his reputation. Both of them were foreknowledge.
That's funny. He was headed down the right road and then he went, zing! You know? See? Obvious cult error.
On Mark, on life eternal, see verse 17. Okay.